Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
If we adopted my bill, our bill, we would be in the mainstream of most everybody else in the world. I think there are 47 of the 50 European countries have a ban on abortion from 12 to 15 weeks. And I picked 15 weeks, which is a little longer than Belgium, Germany, and Spain, longer than France, Denmark, and Norway. Now, why did I do that? Because I feel comfortable at 15 weeks, the science tells us that the nerve endings are developed to the point that the unborn child feels pain. So the theory of the case here is not to be like Europe so much, is to have a standard in America that would prohibit abortions during the birthing process at a stage where it's pretty clear from the science and most of the world, this should be a no-go.
That's Senator Lindsey Graham talking about the Protecting Pain-Capable Unborn Children from Late-Term Abortions Act. Well, the media reacted immediately with shock and surprise that the senator would say that we are out of step with the rest of the Western world on abortion policy. They were surprised that we were actually in company with countries like North Korea and China when it came to abortion policy. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, September the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Nate Hochman of National Review joins us to talk about how America's abortion policy compares with other Western countries. Then it's This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough. We'll talk about a Jewish New Year prophecy by Patricia King. And we'll look forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary, talking with Dr. Carl Fikencher about the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16. Joining us to compare America's abortion policy with other Western countries, Nate Hochman. He's a staff writer for National Review, author of a recent column titled America Really Is an Outlier on Abortion. Nate, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd. Good to be with you.
Tell us about a recent New York Times column by Michelle Goldberg trying to level some criticism at Senator Lindsey Graham's recent attempt to get a national gestational limit on abortion.
Right. So Lindsey Graham introduced recently this 15-week proposed national ban on abortion, which is relatively moderate. Most Americans support it. It's something that the vast majority of abortions happens before 15 weeks. But Michelle Goldberg, who's this sort of progressive left feminist, very pro-abortion New York Times columnist, went after him for the speech that he gave on the Senate floor. And what she was targeting specifically was Lindsey Graham making the correct point that a lot of pro-lifers make, which is that America has some of the most radically permissive and extreme late-term abortion laws in the world. And Graham was pointing that out to say we're actually a 15-week ban would bring us into the mainstream of most of the rest of the developed West. And Michelle Goldberg obviously took issue with that because she supports abortion without any sorts of restrictions. And she was trying to argue very unconvincingly that Graham was wrong and that actually the case is much more complicated. But she didn't really give any evidence for it. The only other country she pointed to was Germany. And she overlooks a whole lot of data showing that Graham was actually correct and that most of Europe has restrictions between 10 and 15 weeks when it comes to abortion.
You said the only one she mentioned was Germany. Is Germany the outlier here, really, when it comes to abortion policy?
Well, Germany's more complicated, right? So one of the things Michelle Goldberg was pointing to is that they, like some other European countries, have publicly funded abortions. Women can get abortions effectively for free on the taxpayer dime. The case, it's much more complicated in the U.S. We don't often have that. She was making the point that while Germany technically does have restrictions around the time that Lindsey Graham would want to impose them, there are exceptions for later-term abortions. Again, it's more complicated because those exceptions, you have to go through a medical panel and you have to talk to doctors, et cetera, et cetera. But technically speaking, maybe if you squint your eyes, Germany would be closer to the American abortion regime. But there's still a pretty strong argument that even Germany is more restrictive when it comes to abortion than the national laws, at least America has right now.
Even the Washington Post was forced to concede that Graham had the data backing up his claim. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, this is the really funny thing, right, is that Michelle Goldberg was trying to present this as sort of a pro-life conservative trope, and she was going to debunk it. But you've had a litany of different left-wing sources basically forced to concede that this quote-unquote talking point from pro-lifers is true. So the Washington Post's fact-checkers in 2017 concluded that it was true that the data backs up the claim that the U.S. is one of only seven countries that allows elective abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. And PolitiFact, which is also, if anyone is familiar with its work, a very left-wing quote-unquote fact-checker, also determined that the statement was true. The other six countries besides the U.S. that allow elective abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy are North Korea, China, Vietnam, Canada, Singapore, and the Netherlands. So North Korea and China, I do not think, are countries that we want to be in companionship with on the list. You've got a couple other Western countries that are outliers as well. But the vast majority of Europe and the West, from the UK to Scandinavia to Australia and New Zealand, all have at varying levels much more restrictive abortion laws than we do, which is hilarious because a lot of progressives like Michelle Goldberg often point to countries like Scandinavia as these progressive utopias that they want us to be more like. But in reality, if we were more like them, one of the things that we would do was restrict abortion.
How do you explain the apparent ignorance on the part of not only Goldberg, but many proponents of abortion since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, of where the United States actually stands on the spectrum of abortion policy with respect to other countries?
Well, I think it's quite obvious that it's an incredibly inconvenient fact. It's one of the most inconvenient facts to point out, right? We can have any number of debates about abortion on the merits, when it should be restricted, when it's just. You've got pro-life folks who think that life begins at conception, like I do. You've got pro-choice folks who think it's a woman's choice what to do with her body. But when you look at America in context and you compare it to all of these other countries, like most of Europe, which progressives often admire and say they want America to be more like, and you point out the fact that all of these other developed, civilized countries have come to very, very different conclusions, their population, their voting base, about when abortion should be restricted than America has, and that our decisions about abortion are really radically out of step with the most of the rest of the civilized world. It is a very powerful talking point, because the subsequent question is, well, if you're saying that Lindsey Graham is an extremist for introducing a 15-week ban, then you're also saying that every single Scandinavian country and the United Kingdom and France and Portugal and all these other countries are also extremists, including the left-wing parties there who support those abortion restrictions. That's a very difficult argument to make, and it's obvious that a lot of folks, including Michelle Goldberg, don't want to make that argument because it's inconvenient.
Do you think these other Western countries have ended up where they are because many of them don't have a Roe decision?
Yes.
that really, in essence, codified and ossified abortion policy for almost 50 years in the United States?
Oh, that's 100% what it is. Look, I went to high school in the Netherlands for the first 2 years of high school, and I can tell you there, abortion just isn't an issue in most of Europe. It's not really an issue that politicians debate. You've got right-wing parties, you've got left-wing parties. They debate other issues. But abortion's basically been resolved since the 80s or 90s. And you have exceptions, like France liberalized their abortion laws recently. But for the most part, it's just not a topic that right and left argue about, because everyone kind of has implicitly accepted that you're going to have some kind of access at earlier terms, depending on what kind of country you're in. You're going to have much more restrictions as you get later in the pregnancy. And that's because they had the opportunity to do democratic deliberation, right? It became an issue in the sort of second half of the 20th century. They had the debate out in the public square. The population went back and forth about it, and they did what democracies do best, which is they came to a consensus, which the vast majority of voters in these countries basically agree on, more or less. Americans never got the chance to do that, because with the flick of one Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade took it out of the hands of voters. So we never got the chance to kind of try to build some kind of democratic consensus where you actually have to build a coalition and bring people along with you. And that's why it's such a much more divisive issue here, because we put our stamp down on the most radical end of the spectrum on abortion in the 1970s, and we said voters don't get to have a say. And only now is that actually changing.
So we are now going to start the process that Western Europe has been through, the one you just described. You had mentioned public opinion. Where do you think the consensus really lies on abortion policy in the United States if the voters of the various states are allowed to have a say in things?
You know, it's really tough to know. This is one of the problems with the fact that we haven't really gotten to vote on the issue for the past 50 years. I had a column out today called "Does Abortion Polling Really Matter?" And my argument was, depending on the poll you're looking at and who and how you ask, Americans hold pretty much every single imaginable position on abortion, from broadly supportive way over on the left to incredibly overwhelmingly opposed all the way over on the right. It depends on how you ask the question. It depends on which trimester you're talking about. You know, you've got widespread support in the first trimester. It drops dramatically in the second trimester and almost no support in the third trimester. But all of these polls are contradicting one another. I mean, another example is you get a lot of support, majority support for Roe v. Wade, but it also shows, those same polls show that most Americans think that if you overturn Roe v. Wade, it would ban abortion outright rather than just send it back to the state. So most Americans don't really know what they think about abortion. I think that's the only thing the polls can tell us. And it remains to be seen. I think most Americans are sort of up for grabs. And the next decade is going to be really, really important for pro-lifers because we have an opportunity finally to make our case in the democratic process and bring all those voters who haven't really made up their mind with us. And I think it really is anyone's fight to win.
Now, talk about the dozens of states that are either in the process of or have passed something in the form of a gestational limit, if not outright bans, and how those things are being challenged, which to me is not a very smart thing to do if you don't want the Supreme Court to repeat itself on this. If you're pro-abortion, you don't want the Supreme Court repeating itself on these issues.
Right. And look, the conservative Supreme Court, they've been sort of unclear on some issues. They've upset conservatives on some issues, but they've been on abortion. I think they've made themselves very clear. Dobbs was a very clear decision. Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey was wrongly decided. And I think we can be pretty confident, I mean, knock on wood, that if progressives and pro-abortion activists try to bring up a similar case to the Supreme Court, they're just going to say the exact same thing they said before. You're going to get the same judges taking the same votes. And that's just going to establish another precedent to what Dobbs already established, which is just going to make the overturning of Roe v. Wade even more entrenched. So I think, to your point, it's a very foolish decision for abortion rights activists to try to bring this question to the court again, because they're just going to get their loss solidified even more.
So how do you explain the state-by-state challenges that continue to, or judicial injunctions, things like that, against the modest attempts to regulate abortion?
Well, I think it's two things. One is that I think these abortion rights activists believe, sometimes correctly, that they can get wins at lower level courts where the courts are still more moderate or have more left-wing justices. And you've seen examples of attorneys general issuing injunctions against different abortion bans and whatnot if they're on the abortion rights side of the spectrum. I think the other one is just that abortion rights activists are not used to losing. For the last half century, the courts have been their place. It's been on their side. Every time pro-lifers try to pass any kind of abortion restriction, the pro-abortion rights side can go to the courts and overturn those. And they are still sort of getting used to an America in which the courts are no longer definitively on their side. And the courts in sometimes are actually on the pro-life side. And they're still, I think, operating in this old framework where they think they can just take these things to court and they'll be able to overturn them. And it turns out that we actually have a court system now, I think thanks to a Republican administration for the past 4 years that focused on this, where the judges are at the very least going to say, no, this is up to the people to decide. You don't get to use us as a way to overturn the will of the people anymore. You actually have to convince your fellow citizens.
My take on the Dobbs decision was that if they are looking for someone to blame, they should blame the doctor in the clinic that brought the suit to this current Supreme Court. It seemed like kind of a bonehead thing to do, knowing how the court was comprised. What are your thoughts, finally?
Well, clearly it turned out to be a bonehead thing to do, right? They suffered the most stinging loss they've suffered since Roe v. Wade. To a certain extent, there was an argument that this was inevitable. Once Amy Coney Barrett, the third Trump justice, got on the court, there was going to be a case challenging Roe v. Wade that got brought. It was only a matter of time. But I think, you know, one of the reasons that they did sort of go through with it and actually were trying to aggressively press their case is exactly what we were talking about, where they just could not conceive of the fact that there would be a pro-life or at least pro deciding it in the Democratic Square majority on the Supreme Court. They just, none of them were raised in an era where that was true. And I think they've really been caught flat-footed in some ways, which is why there's such a huge opening right now for pro-lifers to press their advantage, because the pro-abortion side has no idea what to do in an America where they don't have the courts on their side.
Nate Hochman is staff writer at National Review. He's author of a recent column titled America Really Is an Outlier on Abortion. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Nate, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much, Todd. I appreciate it.
Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith joins us after the break. It's time for This Week in Pop Christianity Today, a Jewish New Year prophecy by Patricia King. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Making disciples for life. Across the nation, students are back in school in over 1,800 schools serving children in early childhood through high school. Students are thriving in programs of excellence in a safe, caring Christian environment taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. Connect today for information about a Lutheran school for the children in your family at lcms.org/schools.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Truth, freedom, and vocation are the pillars of a Concordia University Chicago education. Through them, we form our students for lives of influence and service for the common good. This is the education American society needs right now. I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for truth, freedom, and vocation to become the pillars of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Come and hear abortion survivor Melissa Odin, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life, and Blaze TV and radio host Steve Dace at the 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Lutherans for Life National Conferences provide valuable information and encouragement to you, your congregation, and your community. The 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Learn more at lutheransforlife.org/conference.